afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my pleasure and privilege to be joined tonight by Jen, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Jen.
Thanks, Michael. Nice to be here again.
Great. How are you on this warm day?
I'm very warm. Might even go as far as hot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That Zen saying comes to mind: when it's hot, we sweat. When it's cold, we shiver.
Yeah, and I was just thinking that just the other minute, just how if I let go, it's just fine.
Yes, yes. I was noticing that on my bicycle today as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, sort of sticking with the sensations rather than, oh, my gosh, it's so hot, I can't believe this.
Right, so to speak, sticking with the sensations. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
That's good.
Jen, I understand that we're going to have a very special visitor from Zambia in September, October.
We really are, and I just hardly know where to begin, Michael. It's so exciting. So Teresa Kapenda, who is the coordinator of our projects in Cantalumba in Zambia,
yes,
is joining us in the United States.
Great.
And this is her first time outside of Zambia.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's huge for her, and as I've been coordinating this tour, as I'm calling it, the tour with Teresa, and I've talked to many, many people in many different cities to start coordinating all this stuff, I just keep hearing myself say, what an extraordinary human being this woman is. I spoke with another woman who's from Zambia who actually now lives in the United States, and, you know, just, I mean, anyone from Zambia ending up in the United States is an extraordinary thing, and this woman was clearly, in terms of Zambian standards, fairly privileged. Her father had been educated in the UK, and she had a really good education. All of her siblings had a great education. So it's sort of like, well, I could see, you know, how she ended up in the United States. Teresa, I mean, grew up as poor as a human being can be.
Yes.
Just with a mother who was doggedly determined that, yes, she couldn't give her children, you know, everything she wanted to, but she was going to carve out at least the possibility, the opportunity for them to do that for themselves. And boy, has Teresa done that.
Yes, yes. And Teresa grew up in Cantalumba, right?
She did. She
yes.
did, which is what makes her an extraordinary person for the job that she does. I mean, just
yes.
couldn't be more perfect for it.
Her yes.
English is, as people will witness firsthand, is incredible. She dropped out of school in, I believe, the seventh grade. Most people that we speak with in Zambia, their English is decent, not nearly as good as Teresa's, and most people in Cantalumba don't speak a word of English because the English that people learn in Zambia comes from schooling, comes from, you know, the official kind of business language of Zambia is English, and so that's how you learn English as you go to school, but generally you only find people who are really proficient in English are the people who have gone at least all the way through high school, if not on to university.
Yes.
And Teresa dropped out of school in seventh grade because of family finances, and her English is incredible. So,
wow.
She's a bright person.
Wow. And if we want to learn a little bit about Teresa ahead of time, there's a wonderful video on the web.
There is a wonderful video on the web, and our design person is working as we speak on a Meet Teresa webpage that's going live very
soon. Oh, great.
And it has all, you know, tells a little bit about Teresa. It will link to the video, and it will talk about the tour that we're going to be on when we get back to the United States.
Great.
Yeah.
So where will you start?
We are starting in Boston. We're landing in the very end of August, and we're going up to rural Vermont. Not doing an event up there. We're just, I happen to have the great good fortune of having some family up there, and so we're going up there just to kind of get over jet lag, and also it seems like a very kind way to shepherd Teresa into the United States.
Yes.
It's very quiet. It's very beautiful. It's on a little pond. You know, it's there are lakes close by, mountains, you know, so that seems like a good way to start.
Yes, yes, sounds very beautiful.
And then we're working on all our various events, but it looks like we're going to have an event in Boston on September the 9th, the evening of September 9th, probably right in the city in Boston, and that will be kind of a Meet Teresa evening, fairly casual, probably like, you know, a little hors d'oeuvre kind of fun evening for people to join. Then later on, early the next week, on Labor Day, we're going to drive out and meet Sherry and Krista, who will be ending their event out in Western Massachusetts in Kripalu.
Oh, great.
And hopefully catch the tail end of their event just so that people who come to that event get to meet Teresa.
Oh, great.
Yeah, really fun. And then probably stop somewhere right there so that we don't have to hit rush hour, you know, everyone heading back from Labor Day traffic.
Yes.
And then early the next morning, we're headed into New York City. And that night, the night of September 8th, Sherry's doing a talk at Integral Yoga Institute in New York City. And Teresa will be part of that event as well. The event is actually on Making a Difference. So
it's
kind of the application of awareness practice and
service. Kind of appropriate.
Exactly. and again, a chance to meet Teresa, ask questions, all that kind of thing. And then getting up early the next morning and heading to Washington, D.C. And that night, the night of September 9th, we'll be in Bethesda, Maryland, where there's a group called the Insight Meditation Center of Washington.
Oh, great.
And most likely we'll be doing an event with them that evening. And the next night, September 10th, we'll probably be at a restaurant called Busboys and Poets, which is, people should look that up, I mean, even if they're not in the D.C. area, but certainly if they are, it's a really fun, I think fairly new restaurant. I think there's like three or four of them in the D.C. area, who they were started as a tribute to Langston Hughes.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so we're doing a fun, again, Meet Teresa evening there on the 10th. Then, and we're also looking into all kinds of possibilities, like meeting the ambassador to Zambia while we're in D.C. And
oh, my goodness.
Exactly, meeting with folks. And there's even, Michael, talk of someone looking into getting a meeting for Teresa with Michelle Obama.
Wow.
So if anyone knows anyone who can help us make that happen.
Great.
Yep.
Send an email to africa@livingcompassion.org.
Exactly. Yeah. I just, you know, I have these visions of, I mean, of course, not knowing Michelle Obama at all, but just seeing her, and I project she would love both Teresa Capenda and Sherry Huber.
Not to mention our favorite monk, Jen.
Our favorite monk, Jen. If we could have three guests, that's right.
Yes.
What a fun little tea party that would be. Huh?
That would be a great tea party.
And then we're headed to Asheville, and on September the 13th, we'll do an event in Asheville, North Carolina, where we have, as people know, a dedicated sangha.
Yes.
And then we're driving all the way back up to Boston and flying out sometime middle of that next week. And then we're in the process of organizing events. We'll do an event in Murphy's. We'll do an event in Palo Alto. And actually, the event in San Francisco, the date is fairly firm, which will be September the 30th, the night of
the
30th, Wednesday. We'll probably do, a Meet Teresa kind of evening casual get-together in the city.
Great.
And in addition, we plan to do one of the evenings, probably the one in Palo Alto, which we're looking right now at having be the night before the bridge walk on October 2nd, be a Skyped event so that anyone who is not in any of those cities can still join us and meet Teresa and ask their questions.
Oh, that'd be great.
And then, of course, is the grand finale on Saturday, October 3rd, the bridge walk.
Wonderful. Teresa's been hearing about the bridge walk for years.
She's been hearing about it for years. Yeah. She's been hearing about all of you for years.
Yes.
Really. I mean, it's so, she's so cute. She's so excited, as you can imagine. I was telling someone the other day that she has a partner who actually has a pretty good job in Zambia. And for his work, he went to South Africa. It was the last time we were there. I guess it must have been in January. So when we were there in January, he was in South Africa, and she was saying how he would call her. He called her a couple times when he was down there, and he was teasing her, bragging about all the good food that he was eating in South Africa. And she said, "You just wait."
She's
going to get her payback.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting, Michael, and it's one of the things that's been really fun about it is planning it and talking with the people in all the cities. It makes me wish we were going to every little town where we have sangha all over the country, because it's so much fun to tap into people's enthusiasm and excitement about the work. and how excited people are to, you know, do whatever they can to help and, you know, invite friends and family and help, you know. I mean, people have offered to put us up in hotels, and they've offered to pay for venues, and they've offered to, so it's been really, really fun and inspiring. And actually, the folks who we invited to help coordinate the events, we also put out an invitation to help underwrite the tour, so that any of the money that we raise during the tour actually goes to the work in Africa. And everyone has said to us, you have to put out the word, you have to give that invitation to the whole Sangha. So this is the start of that. If anyone feels moved to help underwrite the cost of Teresa's tour, you're most welcome to do that, and that would just be by hopping on the website to make a donation to Africa and putting in the notes field, you know, Teresa's tour or something to that effect.
Yes, yes. And speaking for myself, it seems like a lot of the excitement is all of the good work that all of us have been doing for the whole project in Africa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that it's been such a team effort all the way along.
Yes.
Yeah. And I project, I mean, of course, Teresa's excited to come to the United States. I mean, you can imagine.
Yes.
But I project a big piece of it, too, is that, you know, she always, on that end, you know, we're always bringing stories back from there and, you know, telling people in the United States about all this. And she hears about everyone over here. But it's just an idea. I mean, who are these Americans pursuing, you know?
Yes.
She's met a few of us. But these hundreds of people who are sending, you know, tiny donations, big donations, you know, medium donations. They're putting in their time. They're coming to the bridge walk. They're writing letters. They're, you know, doing all these things, and how extraordinary it will be for her to be in the energy of that community, to actually get to meet people and see, you know, all these people who care about her community.
Yes, yes. Very exciting.
It is. It is.
And I'm sure we're going to be hearing more and more about this as we get closer.
Yes, definitely. I have, you know, a little, I have no idea if it's going to be reasonable, but a little dream that it would be really fun. You know, of course, we'll blog when we go to Africa. We leave, Sherry and I leave for Africa in the very beginning of August, so that's right around the corner, and we'll blog when we're there. And I just think it would be very fun to keep blogging when Teresa and, you know, all of us are on tour. Maybe even have Teresa do some blogging. So
that would be fun.
Wouldn't that be fun?
Perhaps a little tweeting also.
Exactly.
That's the first time I've said that word, so I'm not really in the know, but I know what it is.
I think it was right, Michael. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, very good.
Jen, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. Have a great show.
Okay, we will.
Okay. Bye, Michael.
Bye. Good evening and welcome to Open Air. Tonight it's my pleasure to be joined by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, Michael.
How are you doing?
Good. That was pretty fun, huh?
That was pretty fun.
Yeah. I am really excited, obviously, about Teresa coming. And, you know, something I was thinking about as you guys were talking is how happy I feel for everybody. You know, I feel really happy for the people in Cantalomba because I know what... you know, from being there, what a tremendous difference that the project is making in their lives. And I'm really happy for us here, too. You know, I was thinking about Teresa comes over. It's like, you know, from the very beginning of the project, you know, a big thing that we've talked about is it's not so much about helping someone in a place far away, although that is obviously an element of it. It's about bridging two worlds, you know, so we get assistance on our end because of the contact with the people there, and they get assistance on their end also. And I'm just so happy for all of us that it's working out.
Yeah, I am too. It's really great.
It's almost like, you know, Teresa, it's kind of like it's a symbol of that, it seems like. You know, because she's, you know, we bridge those two worlds all the time because we're always going over there. But the project has matured to the point where it can go the other way. And it's so wonderful. Partly for Teresa, I know how just incredibly excited she is, and partly for everybody that kind of as a symbol, she's making that really big step and is leaving the world that she's known only ever since she was little, has never been out of Zambia at all, as far as I know, to just have a much bigger life than she ever thought was possible. And it just seems like that's kind of what that's what we're all doing all the time, no matter, you know, what element of the organization we're participating in. But it's just really fun to have it be such a concrete manifestation of it in Teresa's visit.
Yes, yes. And you were talking about bridging both worlds, and what occurs to me is the receiving I get by giving.
Mm-hmm.
So I give of my financial resources, and what a gift that is to be able to do that and to see, I'm starting to cry, to see how carefully and how skillfully that money is used to support everybody in Cantaloma.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, you can see it from the blogs and from the photos. And, you know, and it's not even, I mean, of course, we on our end do everything we can to take care of that money, but so do they.
Yeah.
So they pay great attention into the tiniest, level of detail to make sure that money is spent well. And it is. And you can see it in the faces of the people there, you know, and you can see it in the bodies of the people who are involved, how they've changed and become healthy. And, you know, just there's a change happening that I think none of them ever thought was actually going to happen or it was even really possible.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, there's been organizations that have come through the place in the past and made a lot of promises, but no, you know, according to Teresa, nobody's ever really delivered until Living Compassion came. And, you know, there's a commitment there on both sides. And I think it's because there's so much heart in it that the commitment is there, you know, on our side and also on their side. You know, Teresa, I join Jen completely in my admiration for Teresa. I think she's an incredible person. And it's like, I think what stands out about her is just the amount of heart she brings to everything. I think that's why she's successful.
Yes, yes. Yeah, it's really wonderful. I'm looking forward to meeting her myself.
Yeah, it should be a fabulous good time. And, you know, just very personally, it'll be fun for me, too, because I've met her a number of times on her turf. But
yeah.
And I might even, there's talk that I might get the honor of picking them up at the airport when they land in San Francisco. I really hope I do. So I just can't wait to see her great big eyes. And she's got this smile that's, you know, just stretches all the way across her whole face. And I, you know, I can just see her light up and how excited that she'll be to be here. And I don't know, it's a good thing.
And you know what the other good thing is, of course? We have many, many callers who would like to talk to us today.
Okay, good. Well, let's do it.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael. It's Anna here from England.
Hey, Anna.
Hi. I phoned only sort of a fortnight ago, so this isn't really like me, but all the conditions were all perfect to phone tonight. So my husband is away working, and I don't have to get up really early in the morning, and I'm catching up on this whole year where it's been really difficult for me to ring in. So
that's great. It's like the planets are aligned for this evening.
Yeah. So basically, from my end, if it's a really good opportunity for me to ring, even if I haven't particularly got anything that I need to talk about, I think I'm going to ring.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, for sure. Because you're participating, yeah?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's guaranteed to be something that will be helpful.
Yes. Yes. Well, I have got something that I thought I would talk about. So when I called a couple of weeks ago and I spoke to Melinda, and I was just talking about how I'd finished my teacher training course over here. And I recently got just a few hours teaching, which is absolutely brilliant and really fantastic because there aren't a whole lot of jobs sort of going. It's only a few hours at the moment, but I'm really confident that they're going to build up.
Great.
And I did... So at the moment, so my teaching, it's in further and higher education. But this week and last week, the college where I've got my teaching hours has been running what they call taster sessions. So that's where school children come to the college and they do a subject for a couple of hours. And this helps them decide whether it might be for them. They've still got a year to go at school.
Okay,
They're
just about ready to make the transition, but not quite.
That's right. Yeah. And I did my very first one last Friday afternoon, and it was so challenging. It was really, really hard. And all of this year, I've had lots of experience at all different levels. So I have had a lot of experience of young, challenging people. And those have actually been the classes that I've enjoyed the most, and I've been told that those are what I've sort of excelled at. And so next year, my teaching hours to begin with are going to be sort of with that level. So I was really shocked when I had this class on Friday. And of course, they're school children, and it's only for 2 hours. So there were two of them that were showing very challenging behaviour, and it's quite difficult to do something within those 2 hours.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, so at the end of the session, I was like, oh, no, this is awful. This is going to be terrible. How can I do this? And
right.
Then on the way back, what I've been doing all of this year, on my way, because I drive, and it's a 40-minute drive, and I listen to a podcast on the way,
mm-hmm.
and then I listen to just whatever. I just put it in, so I've been listening to all sorts of bits of open air. And on the way back, I was listening to one where Sherry was talking to somebody, and something to do with possibly a court case or something like that. And the caller was talking about how she always wants to sort of hide from people. She doesn't like to get people angry. It was something like that. And Sherry was saying, whatever it is that we don't want to do, that's what life will give us.
Bingo.
And if we say, right, I want whatever it is, then, you know, you never know, it might fall away. So I heard, that was fantastic. So over the weekend, I practiced sort of thinking, right, I want challenging students.
Uh-huh.
I want them. And so I had a full day on Monday, and it was fantastic. I did have challenging students.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah,
it was great, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's great. And there's a big difference, isn't there, between, you used two words at the beginning, challenging and hard. There's
yes.
a real big difference between those two. That they suggest two really different attitudes of mind, don't they?
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
challenging
is fine. You know, the ego doesn't like challenging.
Mm.
Because ego wants to always stay in the same place.
Mm.
Ego doesn't want to budge or have to change or move or grow or anything like that. But the heart loves challenges because that's what causes us to grow, is to run into situations that we don't have any idea how to do this, and we learn how, and we watch ourselves go through and come out the other side, and we come out a much bigger person. So that's fun. But, ego looks at it, calls that hard, and that's designed to make it into something that we decide not to do and to try to keep us as small as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's felt like. It's today I had there were two students again that were sort of could have been my worst nightmare. So instead of drawing, they were covering their pages with swear words and the whole lot. You know, it was like really, and for some reason it was absolutely fine. I couldn't believe myself. It was great.
Uh-huh. Yeah, isn't that fun to kind of surprise yourself in that way and watch yourself being in a way you really couldn't imagine that you could be?
Yeah.
So this is where the practice begins, right? With this.
Yeah.
Because, it could be, we never know, it could be that this issue has passed you forever, you will always experience this as challenges rather than something hard, and life will be good from here on out, but, it's not usually what happens.
No.
Right? So it's very likely that, you'll go into another situation, and, the conditioning will be there, and the voice will be there trying to talk you into being small. But in a way, that's okay, too, because that's just another one of the challenges.
Yes. It's been really great because I've been really enjoying sort of like my teacher training and now the actual teaching, because you can use it as practice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's good to have something that is a little bit uncomfortable to practice with, isn't it?
Oh, it's really good because it separates you from it. It does give you distance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In a way, we could say, a lot of the kind of the rationale, I don't know if that's the right word, but something like that, around, the monastery where I live is to sort of guarantee that people will have the kind of experiences that you're having.
Uh-huh.
Because in a monastery, you don't have a lot of choice about what you do. And a lot of times things you're given to do are really challenging. Or there's something you don't know how to do it, or, you might feel like you're inadequate to it, you don't have a skill or something like that. And it's sort of designed on purpose so that we have to run into things like that and go through them and grow according to that. And it sounds like you've kind of inadvertently, or maybe even somewhat on purpose, caught on to that. And you're,
you've
chosen a track that is offering those things to you.
Yes, I think I have sort of taken that in, that is what happens. And so anything that I hear from Living Compassion, if I can implement it over here, I do it.
Uh-huh.
At every moment, every opportunity.
So
now I realize and I know that sort of the practice is going to be there the whole time, and I'm really excited about it, because I'm sure that it will make me a better teacher as well, and so it will help some of those other young students that have had, you know, all of these, you know, they've all got their problems and their challenges that are far bigger than mine.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, that they all have their challenges too.
Yeah,
and maybe
yeah.
A piece of the work you can do with people is to show them how living a life in the middle of one's challenges can be a joyful thing.
Yes, I'd like to do that, definitely. That's the plan.
It's a good plan, yeah.
The art is secondary. The art teaching is secondary.
Yeah, that's really, yeah, they'll forget that by next year, probably. But to see someone who is living from the place you're talking about, because, you know, that is, it's pretty rare in this world. At least the world I am aware of, outside of people who have really made that conscious choice that you're making.
Mm.
Because, you know, we're trained to try to stay as small as possible and try to be as comfortable as possible. You know, that's a lot of what goes on in the way people kind of plan their lives and strategize. You know, you get enough money that you won't have to face anything difficult, you know, things like that. But to get it it's not what we think it's going to be. You know, it's not going to provide the happiness that we think it's going to.
Mm.
It actually can provide a lot of unhappiness.
Mm.
You know, because to set up life where to be as comfortable for conditioning, essentially, as possible, is one where conditioning is really going to thrive, and we really aren't, and that's going to be a miserable existence. But to get it that, no, that's not what life's all about. Life is about, you know, kind of like I was thinking as you were talking earlier about, you know, that's why people, like, go on these adventures. You know, that's why I went to the moon, or why Lewis and Clark went and did what they did, or, you know, all these different kinds of people, because, you know, there's something larger, and if we can get it that to be engaged with that and say yes to that and put our energy into that's actually what's going to produce a happy life.
Yes.
We're in really good shape. And to be able to show that to young people who are just starting out, boy, what a gift that would be.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a freedom, isn't it? I can remember just sort of over the weekend sort of saying, you know, I want freedom here. I want to be able to walk into a lesson and be prepared for anything. Anything can happen, and I will be okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Including it doesn't go well. From
yes, absolutely,
yeah,
definitely.
That's the tough one, because
yes. That's
what conditioning uses as evidence that was a really bad idea. You know, we shouldn't know expansion is bad. It just produces difficult, painful situations we should avoid as much as possible.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's not true at all, because that very thing, well, I think this is what you're saying, that, you know, so it doesn't go well. Well, there's the next challenge. And rising to meet that challenge, it will be a joyful thing, even as painful as it might be for the part of us who maybe regretted something that happened or whatever.
Yeah. Well, what's really handy, what I've really noticed there, is if you listen to the radio show archives, that's always mentioned somewhere at some point.
Yeah, if only people knew how easy it was, huh?
Yeah. If you listen to it kind of like nearly every day, you'll be reminded every third day, I reckon.
Yeah. Oh, and it's true. I mean,
we
just have to remember, because everything that we're looking for is right here.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, congratulations.
That's fantastic. All right. So thank you. And I'll obviously keep you all updated as to how it all goes.
Yes, please.
Yes. So thank you for your time.
And thank you for yours. Thanks for calling in tonight.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye, Anna.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, I didn't pay her any money to talk about the archives. So just want to be clear about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's not the only one, as you're probably aware, Michael.
Yes.
It's I don't think we knew that this was going to happen when we started, but people are talking all the time about how much they rely on the archives in order to provide sort of a structure for practice in their lives.
Yes, yes, indeed. You can add me to that list also.
Yeah. It's handy, too, because, like, you know, like Anna, you know, you can just, when you're driving around in the middle of the world, just pop it in, and there's the support.
Yes, absolutely. It's great, you know, with an iPod or whatever your music player is anywhere in the world. I think there are over 300 episodes there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you get to the end, you just start over again. They sound brand new every time.
Yeah, I'm sure they must after 300.
Yes. Dave, we're going to have a sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
Okie dokie.
What would you do if you knew you could not fail? How free would you be? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart?
This music by Trish Brooks for Culligan gives voice to what Simply Celebrate is all about. Opening to rivers of joy, listening to our hearts, trusting ourselves and our lives. Simply Celebrate is a book and business that grew out of gratitude for the work of Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha. We use the practice as a foundation for helping people wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in every moment. Please visit simplycelebrate.net.
What if you bathed in an ocean of roses? What if you swam in a river of...
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have our next caller here.
Okay, good.
Caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa in Seattle.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
So I'll echo that unpaid gratitude for the archives. I use them every day when I'm running, so it really is a great service. Thank you all very much.
Yeah, that's super.
And I'm calling tonight about my 7-year-old.
Okay.
And any thoughts that you might have. She's lately been really disturbed by these voices in her head.
Interesting.
That she's noticed. And I don't think at first she thought they were separate from her, but they're saying... She's reporting things that she's hearing that, in some cases, she doesn't even know the words. She doesn't even know what it means.
Hmm.
And the stuff is really upsetting her because these comments that are in her head are being made about people in her life that she knows and likes. But there's all these comments about other people.
Hmm.
And it's all inside her head. And she started to talk to me about them. And, you know, I've done what I can to help her, try to understand that, you know, it's not real, it's not true, it's not you. But I, you know, I wanted to see if there were any thoughts that you might have on it. And also she's here and might like to hear something, you know, if I can put her on at some point.
Okay, all right, we'll try it.
Well,
so,
you know, because she's listening to me, but I don't know how much she's, you know, taking in, so.
Right. So has she told you the kinds of things that she hears?
Yes, she
mm-hmm.
has.
And it's mostly about other people in her life?
Yes, the comments are about other people, and either about how they are, what they look like, just these, you know, and just things will pop into her head, and she's really bothered by them.
Uh-huh.
And it's just kind of funny, and if I wasn't in practice, I probably just wouldn't think much about it or tell her to stop thinking it, or, you know, but she's interpreting it as she's bad for having these thoughts.
Yeah, I bet she is. Now, when you look at what you're aware of in your own mind and what goes on in there, do you recognize what's going on with her?
It seems like she's hearing some voices of conditioning.
Uh-huh.
She's hearing, something like that. And I think it's getting more and more because it's really working to make her suffer.
Uh-huh.
She's really upset about everything.
Yeah.
And I, And it seems similar to things that I deal with.
Yeah, and it sounds really kind of like just kind of, you know, on the street variety conditioning / self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you...
It seems that way to me.
Yeah, and it sounds like it too, because that's the way it all works. You know, conditioning is saying things in the head. You know, it's expressing judgment or whatever. It's basically expressing what we call self-hatred. And it might be directed at us. It might be directed at others. Sounds like in her case, it's mostly directed at others. And then we're supposed to be aware of that just to the extent that we can feel bad about it.
Right.
So, you know, a piece of the puzzle is, okay, and that's actually you. This is what self-hate says. That's actually you that are thinking those things, and that proves that you're a really bad person.
Right. And I've tried to talk with her about, okay, well, do you believe this that's coming? You know, do you believe this thing about this other person? She says no.
Uh-huh.
You know, and would you ever say that? No. Is it even true? No.
Mm-hmm.
So then this can't be you. So I'm trying to lead her through that to the idea that these voices aren't her and she doesn't have to use that as a way to, you know, feel bad.
Yeah, yeah, which of course is what we're all trying to do. So it seems like the difference between the situation she's in and the situation we're in is that she doesn't have the peace yet of trying to hide it the way the rest of us do.
Yeah, yeah, she is just telling me. And it's pretty constant. I mean, she's telling me all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, wow, that is,
you know,
interesting, isn't it? Yeah, because...
And she calls them her secrets. She says, well, I have a secret. I need to tell you another secret.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I've told her she doesn't need to keep them secret because she can tell me anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so we talk about it.
Uh-huh.
And talk about what, you know, that it doesn't need to mean anything. It's just this voice, and it's saying these things. And but I found it really interesting that it used a word that she didn't even know. She didn't know a word.
Oh,
that,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was in her own head. Maybe she had heard it, but she didn't know what it meant.
Yeah, it's kind of
thought that was really weird.
Yeah, it's very weird.
Yeah.
Very creepy. Well, it really
yeah.
speaks to, you know, oftentimes we'll make analogies like comparing conditioned mind to like a parasite or like to almost to like a thing like out of a science fiction movie that's kind of living off our life force.
Mm-hmm.
And it really speaks to that, doesn't it? Because you can see it. Because obviously, I mean, in us, I mean, even in, it's pretty easy to see in other grown-up people that they're actually innocent of this thing that's going on inside their minds. We're all conditioned to believe that we aren't innocent. That's, you know, this conditioning is actually me, and I should feel bad about it. But we're not, and that's fairly easy to see with outside, even grown-up people. Harder to see. Inside, of course, with us because of all that conditioning is there. But boy, in a 7-year-old, to see, because I would imagine, you know, her innocence of this really stands out in comparison to the hatefulness of all the conditioning that's in there.
Mhm. Yeah, it does. And I've actually told her that I think she's pretty lucky.
Yeah.
To be
noticing
this so young.
Yeah, I think she really is, and she's also really lucky to have you.
Well, it's been helpful to have gone through it myself and seen it, seen what, you know, self-hate and conditioning can come up with
mm-hmm.
for myself, and then I'm aware of it, and then I can kind of try to guide her, but I feel like I'm kind of coming up, I keep saying the same things,
mm-hmm.
and I'm hoping eventually they will sink in, but I don't know if I'm saying all the right things that I could be saying.
I wonder, Lisa, if you really look at it, is it actually a matter of saying the right thing or is it a matter of you not believing it yourself?
No, me not believing my own stuff or me not believing her stuff?
Both, really, but I was particularly talking about her stuff.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't believe it. I mean, I don't believe the things that... I believe that she's hearing it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't believe that it's real or
yeah,
that it's
absolutely.
Her.
Yeah, and I
right?
bet that that's really getting communicated.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much say it multiple times every day,
mm-hmm.
you know. And lately, it's really amped up, and so we've had many talks pretty much all day long where I talk about this today I think it's been at least 10 times that we've talked about different things that have come into her head and that have really disturbed her. But I don't think I've quite gotten through that it isn't her and she doesn't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah. Well, and I, and who knows? You know, I don't know enough about being a 7-year-old to really speak to, you know, what how that's going to go for her. But you know, at some point, she's very likely to get that. It might be sooner, it might be later, but having, I would imagine, having somebody there who just like she is learning to, really doesn't believe that she is that self-hatred, you know, who is willing to, and to give her a forum for, like, you know, spilling the secrets. Wow, if anything in the world is going to assist someone in getting to that place themselves, that's got to be it. Because, you know, at some point along the line, we all must have stumbled across that at some point, but we all talked ourselves into hiding it from everybody.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, you know, when people come in the retreat to talk about that, you know, it's like, boy, what a relief it is to be sitting in a room full of people where people are owning up to all of this hateful stuff that's going on. Because it's another big part of the trap that self-hate puts us in, that, you know, we're not allowed to talk about it. We have to believe it, you know, we're the only one, there's something wrong with us, and you know, we have to hide it because everyone else is going to find out how bad we really are. So for her, just as, you know, as she's exploring this, to have somebody there who understands, you know, you understand this from your own experience of yourself, that this has nothing to do with her, that she has someone there to model the kind of mentoring that she will hopefully be able to access as she goes through her life, that is, just seems like such a powerful thing to have.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have anything that you might tell me about getting her past the, how do I say this? She's, you know, she brings it up and we talk about it, but then the very next thing that comes up in her head, she feels bad about it. And I try to help her to, you know, it's okay, we just need to move, you know, you can just move on. You can tell me what it is and then just move on. But she kind of gets stuck in the feeling bad.
May I suggest a different tact?
Yeah, please.
And this is just to experiment with, but I've been kind of beating around the bush with this, so I'll just kind of come right out and say it.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's what she actually really needs. If she needs someone to explain her with ideas what's going on in the hopes that she'll get that.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Just let her tell what she's telling and just be there?
Well, what about saying, I know that you're familiar with what we call reassurances here at the monastery.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What would it be like just to say your reassurances to her?
I've said quite a bit to her, you know, along those lines, you know, reassurances that would be for her.
Yeah. The advantage of that is it doesn't have, there's very little chance that something could slide in, something of your own conditioning, like, I want her to get past this.
Okay.
Yeah,
I can see that. But I have kind of wanted her to be able, not to get past the whole thing, because I know that that's, one, not possible, and two, just takes a long time to practice at it, but to not get stuck in each individual little thought.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've been trying to help her not get stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I'm suggesting is, you know, to maybe really look at that and see, you know, where exactly does that come from in you?
Where does the wanting her not to get stuck come from in me?
Yeah, and is that from an unconditional place, or is that something that you're bringing to it that might not be that necessary?
Well, that's something to look at. I hadn't thought about that.
The reason I was suggesting the reassurances is, you know, it's like the same thing that you want for you is what she's going to want for her, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
which is a pure unconditional relationship. You know, so like I know for myself, you know, you're essentially playing the compassionate being for her. You're modeling for her how to do that. And I know from like with my compassionate being, I don't necessarily need someone to help me get to someplace different from where I am, because that's kind of my job.
Right.
You know, what I really want from my compassionate being is to accept and love and appreciate me exactly where I am.
Okay, so just focus on accepting and loving her just how she is. I've been trying to do that, but then I've also brought in this other, trying to help her understand what's going on. So maybe not focus on that so much.
Or not even, you know.
Or not at all.
Well, or just doing your practice, you know. So you're there, so what's going on with her is also in some way going on with you. And so while she's doing what she's doing, I would, you know, so you both can be participating in the reinsurances.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm not sure if that's... Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I had thought about actually making a reinsurances tape for her.
Uh-huh.
But I could say it myself. We could just, you know, say it. I could say things to her, and maybe she could say it together or something.
Yeah. Well, of course, you'll have to find out, you know, as
mm-hmm.
it goes along. It seems, you know, it's a... You've got there's an amazing kind of opening happening where, you know, she's willing to talk to you about it. And, you know, just to keep that channel open seems like a wonderful thing. And for wonderful kind of for both of you, because, you know, she is doing her practice in the way that that she knows how, and you're assisting with that, and you're also doing yours. So it gives you a chance to kind of see how conditioning works. It gives you a chance to, you know, in a way, you know, you're playing the mentor for her. She's playing that which needs to be mentored for you. And so there's a way in which kind of you both get to sort of practice. You know, you get to practice
mm-hmm.
that relationship, and so does she. And so it's kind of neat the way it's working out.
Yeah, it is. It is kind of neat. And what seems to be really fun for me is that to watch that I'm not going into a beating over it.
Yes.
That I'm not going to, well, I'm just a bad mom and look how conditioned she is and,
right.
you know, I haven't gone there, but I've been aware that I haven't gone there.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I've really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really a better way of saying what I was saying a minute ago, that essentially you're being, for yourself, what you want to be for her.
Right.
You're accepting what's going on with you. You're not going to conditioning with it. You're not believing the voices.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a lot of motivation because here's this, you know, this beautiful little one with these voices who really need someone to be present. So it's a great opportunity for you also to change or continue to work on that relationship with your own voices.
Yeah, and that I have actually been able to be that compassionate being for her has been kind of, well, it's been a little bit of a surprise, but very, you know, supportive of my practice.
Absolutely. Yeah, which really is the only way we can look at it. You know, that's kind of what I was trying to get at a minute ago, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, for you, it's not even really about her, even though she's your daughter, you know? You know,
mm-hmm.
it's really all about you and your practice and being just as centered and compassionate as you can and taking care of yourself in the best way you can with whatever comes up with her, and that's what she'll get.
Okay.
You know, that's what she'll actually receive from you. Is how you are with yourself through this. You know, that's what she'll learn. You know, the words, the ideas, they're good to say, but what she'll actually get, I think, is probably who you actually are with all of this.
I would guess that that's probably so, looking back on her life and who she is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. There's some things I hadn't even thought of.
Okay,
which is why I call. Get a different perspective.
Well, yeah, well, it's really a really interesting thing that's happening. So give us a report down the road, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I will definitely call back and we'll see what happens here.
Okay, good.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air. Tonight we have the privilege of being joined by Dave, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, that was fascinating.
It is, isn't it?
It is fascinating to have an external representation of those voices.
Yeah, I really was struck by just how creepy the whole thing is.
Yes.
You know, because like I was saying, you know, in a grown-up, you know, it's like, well, we're kind of used to that. But in a child, even though we know it's there, but to have it so just so obvious, what a difficult thing and painful, hurtful thing conditioning is.
Yes, yes, yes. And the opportunity that Lisa has and all of us have to be that for ourselves and to model that for everyone else.
Yeah, it's really true. Yeah, it makes a person grateful for, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, for all the different situations in life that bring it up. I mean, the one that was just being described is just perfect, you know,
yes.
Because it takes care of everyone in a way. Everyone gets to practice what we're going for, especially when we remember the part about, you know, really this is all about me. It's not actually about another person. It's all about me. This is my opportunity to end suffering, and, you know, I can just trust that if I'm doing that to the best of my ability, that's the greatest service that I can do in the situation.
Yes, yes. Wonderful. Dave, we're going to have another sponsor break here, and then we will be right back.
Okay, great.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Dave, we have four callers in the queue here, and we have about 15 minutes.
Okay, we'll see what we can do.
See what we can do. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Sherry from San Francisco.
Hey, Sherry.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Sherry.
I'm wanting to jump on the bandwagon of sending praise for the Open Air archives.
That's great.
Yeah, it's actually what sort of spurred me to want to call in tonight. I was taking a short walk at lunch and listening to one of, I think it was last week's show, and I just suddenly felt myself just flooded with joy, just totally overcome. And, you know, I think it was sparked by the Open Air, but what happened was I started getting all of this stuff dropping in about just the practice in general. And just feeling like, gosh, I just want to call in and express gratitude, you know. Because I feel like so often what happens is, you know, conditioning is wanting to, well, what kind of trouble do I have that I could, you know, tease out or something like that.
What kind of misery can I cook up here?
Exactly. And one of the things that I also wanted to say is that I was really seeing today, for some reason, very clearly how much the Going Beyond Karma class has changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was something that it suddenly struck me that it's like, wow, I haven't been grateful for this. And it suddenly just came in today.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you just kind of remembered that.
Yeah, like I was on a call this morning with my business partner who's, since it actually happened during the Going Beyond Karma class, was a wonderful thing that occurred. And I realized after I hung up with her, like, this all happened because of that class.
Well, it happened because of the class, and what else might we add? Oh, yeah, your willingness, your ability to kind of step up and do the work, all that stuff too, huh?
All of it too. Yes, all of it, all of it. And also, you know, the thing that I remember so clearly about that period of time is being on those calls. And just hearing person after person talking about their willingness and what they were doing and how they wanted to step into something bigger.
Yeah, it's really powerful to witness stuff like that, isn't it?
It is. And I'm seeing it again. You know, I think that was the other thing I was seeing today, is how everything is being compounded in such a good way with the money class.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, I feel like, wow, that's really now building on everything that sort of got going last fall. And now I get to step into all this other stuff to look at that is completely connected for me.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, what I'm seeing as you're saying that is for every person, really, there's a way that life can work. And, you know, once we're not terribly in touch with that. You know, like you said, there's a habit to, you know, cook up whatever kind of unhappy stew that we want to get involved with. and kind of sabotage that or pull the blanket over it, or, you know, to forget that there actually is this way that life can work. And the way we find out that life can work is we step into this possibility. We say yes, which I think is what you're describing, saying yes to the class, you know, to all the other opportunities that are available, you know, listening to the podcast. They're all, you know, forms of saying yes. And when we say yes in this really kind of enchanting way, life lines up for us. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then it's funny how no matter what we are, where we are, what we're doing right now is building on what's come before, you know. And then we'll go off and do the next thing, and that will build on what we're doing right now. It's like it's kind of like being guided, you know, sort of step by step. We can't really say where we're going because that's the mystery. But being guided somewhere that we trust and we can feel, you know, we can feel it. It's where we want to go.
Oh, I love that. I love that, and I think that you just perfectly articulated what I've been feeling lately. And it's what I love so much is that it's like it's not pushing. It's not me saying, you know, I gotta get over there. How do I get there? It feels like there's all of these, I don't know, it sounds kind of corny, but it's like I can feel the whole sangha,
uh-huh.
you know, when I'm doing things.
Yeah. Yeah. You're really sort of connected with the life around you, it sounds like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it's funny because one of the other things that I was thinking about today is that, there's been a surprising sort of turn of events with taking the Making Peace with Money class, in that during the course of the class, I ended up investing a lot of money for me into a workshop to support my business.
Uh-huh.
And I never would have done that in the past. Mm-hmm. It's money that I put the class on a credit card, and I expected there to be this incredible backlash of, how stupid was that? You shouldn't have done that. Fear about the money. How am I going to pay it back? And instead, every day it seems like doors are opening that I sort of just know are connected, even though they're kind of not.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like by doing that, by trusting, that it opened up something.
Yeah. Sherry always jokes at this point in this conversation that it's enough to make a person religious.
Yeah. That's great. I know, exactly.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, life is magical, or can be. And, you know, it just speaks to how big life is outside of conditioned mind, doesn't it? You know, because when we're in conditioned mind, you know, I mean, it could be those doors are opening all the time, but we don't see them. Either that or they just don't open. It's like, we're out of the flow. We're stuck on some little island all by ourselves, you know, focused on something really tiny and feeling bad about it, you know?
Mm.
Whereas there's this other opportunity, which admittedly takes a huge amount of willingness and a dedicated practice to be able to access, but it's there, where we're just kind of in the flow. We're trusting life to give us what we want. We're willing to take risks, you know, like it sounds like you do with the money, you know, when that seems that is what arises as the thing to do. And it's like we're kind of being helped along the way in a way that we never could have orchestrated on our own if we were put in charge of it.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think that the best part of it is that feeling of not feeling alone, both because they're, you know, as one of the callers was saying tonight, it's just a matter of no matter where we are in the world, like listening to the Open Air Archives, you're with Sangha,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's that, but also not feeling alone in that it does feel like life is sort of there.
Yeah, and what's nice about that for me is, you know, with Sangha, we're not alone in the happy, expansive times. We can really feel that connection. We're also really not alone in the confused, unhappy, not sure what's going on times.
Yes.
You know, because we share all of those. You know, we're all have our own struggles and challenges, and we're facing in to the best of our ability. We're having breakthroughs and successes. We're going under, getting overwhelmed. You know, it's all just a part of the process of a human trying to wake up and end suffering. To do that alone, it's not really such a good time because it's just kind of hard. But to do it with other people and to share in everyone's, you know, victories and everyone's struggles, it makes it all okay. I don't know if that's your experience, but it really is mine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I love, you know, even right now, it's like, you know, I'm feeling full of gratitude and joy. And while you're talking, it's like I totally know, you know, whether it comes after I hang up the call and, you know, I'll get beaten up for what I said or tomorrow or whatever, I know that other side will come in.
Yeah,
conditioned mind will come back.
Yeah, and that's just part of the deal, isn't it?
It's just part of it.
Yeah, it's what we were talking about earlier in the call. You know, if we take that personally and feel bad about that, then we have one experience. But if we accept that as that's the next challenge, then it's like that's how we stay in the flow. You know, okay, well, this is the thing. A minute ago, it was something else. It was like some external situation maybe that I am practicing with. Now it's my internal reaction to that. Now that's what I'm practicing with. You know, always being in a relationship of, you know, looking to see what's going on and letting go. It's, you know, there's a skill in being able to kind of stay in the flow with it.
Yeah. And just hearing you say the word challenge again just reminded me of, you know, the gratitude for the conversation earlier tonight. Instead of looking at it as like, oh, it's so hard, all the voices are going to come back, why can't I just, you know, hold on to this place? It's like, I loved that distinction.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I can look for those challenges.
Yeah, and it seems so happy or so important for us all to remember that is actually how it is. You know, I think part of our conditioning is to have some idea that, no, life's not supposed to be like that. You know, it's supposed to be all rosy. I'm supposed to be getting what I want all the time, feeling all the feelings I want to feel all the time. That's the way it's supposed to be. You know, anything that's not that, there must be something wrong. But to get at that, no, that's at least, I mean, as far as I can tell, that's not how life is at all. You know, life is about step by step working through this tremendous piece of work that we have called ending suffering. You know, and a lot of that is dealing with the suffering and letting go. Sometimes it's about believing it, getting beaten up, getting dragged through whatever it drags us through. It's just all a part of the deal. If we think that that shouldn't be happening, that's something wrong with it, that takes us out of the position of being able to profit by it. But to get it that, no, that really is part of the deal, and it's to be expected, and you really even embraced and you know, there's room, like you're saying, there's room for gratitude for it, because that's the very thing that gives us the opportunity to go beyond it into the place that we want to be.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you. It's like I love that it's like I've been talking to you. It's sort of you've helped me expand the idea of the gratitude from being just like, okay, I'm really grateful to be in this place that feels good, to wow, you know, what it'd be like to be grateful in those other places.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and just the practical benefits of that. Because so, it's going to happen, right? Might as well embrace that just like we embrace everything else.
I love that. Well, I'll definitely look to doing that. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Sherry. Thanks a lot for calling in.
Okay. Have a good night, you guys.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Sherry. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, we have about 6 minutes left here and a couple more callers.
Okey-dokey.
And I should say, if we don't get to everybody, I want to encourage you to call back early next week. Okay, next call. You are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Dave and Michael. This is Jen from Pennsylvania.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. It's been a great show to listen to. I just a couple quick things. I don't want to take too much time, but one was just how I think I on another call was mentioning I've been trying to do the opposite of what conditioning tells me to do. And I know I've heard Sherry talk about that, and I've been doing a lot of that. And it was so interesting tonight to see, like, a part of me knows I'm so happy that I called, but boy, I had like the strongest sensations and feelings and like so many better things that would be a much better choice. And it was really hard to do the opposite and go ahead and call.
Yeah. Well, the whole system is against it, it sounds like.
Yeah, it was really, like, it didn't seem that there was any way that with the feelings that I had, it could be, you know, at all a good choice to call in. So it was just really interesting to see all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really points to how challenging this work is that we're doing, because conditioning's got a lot of good stuff to use. You know, it can flood you with its energy. It can, make you have all these different feelings. It can give those feelings all different kind of labels that are scary. You know, it can suggest all kinds of ways to get away from it and all kinds of groovy coping behaviors you could do. You know, so to stand up against all that and say, no, you know, I'm actually not going to believe any of this in my body or my mind or my emotions that are going on. And instead, I'm gonna do what I know I need to do.
Yeah. It feels like I'm just sort of, you know, able to, like, it almost feels like a lot of me is still believing it, but there was enough of a part to be like, nope, I'm still going to make this call. So, you know, I'm just so grateful, as everybody's echoed, for the archives and the practice to get support for doing things like that just wouldn't seem possible or even like they make any sense without the support of the practice. So
yeah, absolutely. And we really need a process for doing that, don't we? We need a practice, and we need support to be able to find that kind of place of willingness in ourselves to go up against all of our programming.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. So thank you to you guys for everything that you do to offer for that support. So, and just really quickly, I had called in and I'm looking at trying to do the, you know, spend 1 week doing, imagining you're doing one decision and then the next week doing the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I sort of thought I understood how to do that, but then I don't know, I got a lot of kind of getting told that I wasn't doing it right or whatever this week, trying to take the one perspective. So I just wanted to quick call in for just to check in about it. I just basically, I know that the idea is to say, nope, the decision is made, it's final, but it sounded also like the encouragement was to still hear the voices that came up around it to kind of get an idea of those perspectives. But what was happening for me is then that became a slippery slope into then those voices start talking to me, and then it didn't feel like the decision was really made. It was sort of like, well, it's not really for real. You're just doing this pretend 1 week thing, and then the conversation, you know, so I didn't quite know how to work with it, and I wanted to really use this in a good way and get a little, I guess, ask about kind of how to work with that.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, it sounds like you're having a great workshop with it, how it's going.
Yes. Yeah,
so really, there's really no way to go wrong with this. But I think what the suggestion was, and it might take, you know, a fair amount of determination on your part, because, you know, it in order to divide things up in the way that you are, you know, 1 week and then the next week, you know, you'll have to really sort of stand up to conditioning in the way that it's going to want to come in and jerk you around in the way, like it usually does. But I think the idea is, you know, you spend 1 week. I don't know if it's so much that the decision is final. It's just that you're living from the place as if it is. And so you get to explore, what's that like? You know, so I've made the decision, you know, go left. All right, what does life look like going left? And one, you know, actually you might be seeing what life looks like going left. You know, you turn left and conditioning says, no, that's the wrong way to go, and comes in and does everything that it does. And then the next week you turn right, and then you look at, see, well, what does life look like turning right? What it does is it takes away the element which most people get stuck with, the consequences of actually making the decision. Because, you know, usually people don't make a decision like that. They just decide. And then they, you know, say, well, I'm just going to turn left. And then there's enormous consequences that come from that, which are really hard to extricate oneself from. So here's a chance to kind of explore it a little and to kind of see what's going on before the decision actually has to be made.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful to just sort of know that, you know, it can't go the wrong way or whatever, and I guess just to see. I told my husband that I was going to be doing this, and so he said, should I be, you know, participating too? Do you want me to, you know, talk about all the things about the one side, the 1 week? And I was like, oh, gosh, I don't think so. I think I have enough to just deal with me, but I don't know. I wondered, you know, if that, what the guidance would be on that. So
I have no idea what your situation is. It could be fun. You know, I think you mentioned that he's kind of on the bleachers, you know, watching, kind of hoping for a decision about this. So it might be fun to involve him. You know, and he could definitely. What would be fun about it would be, it would be kind of like a game.
Right. Okay.
You know, which might help you to stay disidentified a little bit from the urgency that the voices have. You know, so, well, this, you know, of course, you know, the voice is going to say, well, this is stupid. This is just some kind of thing you're doing for the week. Of course it is. That's the point. You know, this
yeah.
is just a game I'm playing to kind of see what's going on. And I bet you that whatever happens as you do that will be what would happen if you were to actually make that decision. So it's kind of one of those, you know, you really can't lose because it's, you're setting up in a way that conditioning is almost kind of stuck revealing itself.
Okay. Okay, great. Yeah, and in some ways getting his perspective would be, I guess, helpful because, you know, what would the consequences be if the decision went one way or another from his perspective would be kind of a part of the conditioning that I would have to look at then, too. So I just was curious about that when he said that. I was like, I don't know. So,
uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
well, great. Thank you so much for the encouragements and all the support. It's so, so helpful.
Yeah. Well, and thanks a lot for your willingness. And thanks for calling in and participating.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Yeah, take care and good luck. And call back and let us know. It's a fun thing to be watching from the sidelines.
Okay. All right. I will. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Michael.
Bye, Jen. Thanks for joining us, Jen. You've been listening to Open Air. We've had the great pleasure and privilege tonight of being joined by Dave, a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Dave, we're over time.
Okay.
And we have a couple callers, and I'm going to invite them to call back early next week. And I want to express my gratitude for everyone who has participated tonight, listening, calling in, facilitating, good news updating, and all that.
Yep, everything that it takes to...
Everything that it takes.
Yeah, to keep the practice going.
Yes. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks a lot, Michael. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.